Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.
Happy Friday. Today is January 4th, 2019. I'm Michelle Pichet, filling in for Jeannie, and I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now let's welcome Michael in support for developing our inner process of Aramaic forgiveness.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Thanks, Michael.
And thank you. Thank you for being available to take the show today. Today's our first day of getting to be with Aria. She's now, let's see, I think almost 20 weeks already, but just this awesome, sweet space of love that's so amazing. And so we get her 3 days a week now. So maybe Jeannie will bring her up in a few minutes to introduce her. In any event, it's pretty awesome. I've already gotten 2 shoulder naps with her this morning. And so amazing just to be in the space of that newborn energy. That's just... Anyway, we are delighted and honored that you're here with us today to be part of this inquiry, this practice, this action of bringing the understanding of and how first century Aramaic forgiveness works, what it is. And as we enter into that practice, and one of the things I thought I'd talk about a little bit today is what we call the evidential nature of the human mind. And there's some interesting Harvard research, actually some of the most quoted research in psychological circles these days. It was back several decades to a study that was done at Harvard where they were able to measure activity in the mind, electrical firing of brain cells. And what they came up with was that in the time frame, and the time frame was about a 25th of a second, where approximately 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity were happening in the brain, that in that time frame, the max amount of information that got into conscious awareness was the equivalent of 7 plus or minus 2, so as little as 5 bits of information, as much as 9 bits of data would be available to conscious awareness in that time frame. Just the smallest, tiny fragment. So obviously we call that the evidential nature of the mind. And interestingly enough, what we've discovered is that the only evidence that you ever get to see in your mind is evidence of your own BS. That's belief system, of course. If you had a different set of evidence come up for those initials in your mind, you'll notice that that's evidence in your mind, not mine. BS is belief system. And so when we understand how this mind works, it's very prone to mistaken perception, because perception being a construct of the mind, if there's information that for some reason we are genetically pre-programmed not to see, or through our interaction in the environment and our growth and development have decided there's certain information we just can't look at, then that information is hidden from us. The result is that our perception does not contain accurate evidence from the actuality of a circumstance or situation, but rather contains false evidence. Oftentimes, false evidence appearing real or fear takes over the mind that doesn't have access to all of the evidence that it's designed to have access to. Now, an extreme state of this accurate data happens in someone who's in a state of hypnosis, someone who's gone into this state of suggestibility, can have the information that's available to conscious awareness totally and completely blocked and controlled. For instance, if you've ever watched a stage hypnotist, you know, they've got somebody up on the stage, and normally someone looks down at a stage and light energy bounces off of that stage, hits their eye, is transferred to the brain, causes brain cells to resonate, and the resultant perception built out of that resonance is a stage. But in a state of hypnosis, which is nothing more than susceptibility to an idea, in that state of hypnosis, one can have the evidence that comes forward in the mind totally and completely manipulated by the words of the hypnotist. So normally, light energy would come in and dictate what fires in brain cells. If there's accurate information about the stage, then one gets a picture of a stage that's accurate. But if the hypnotist all of a sudden implants the suggestion, the idea, the mind energy, that you're standing on the deck of a ship. Now, normally, that's what we call looks down at the stage. Light energy enters, brain cells fire. We see our mind's best picture of what is there. The truth is, you've never really seen anything in your life through your eyes, because the eye is a one-way valve that allows energetic information in. You can't see out through them. We say that we see things, but in fact we see what our brain shows us about the objects of attention. Accurately, I see the stage, but with the hypnotist's voice being the source of the resonance that fires the brain cells, and I'm told I'm standing on the deck of a ship, I will look down at the stage and I will see a ship in the water. Literally, my perception can be that distorted. Now, if you listen to the master teachers down through the ages, they've told us over and over and over again to transcend, and that's become something about, you know, float off in space somewhere, transcend. But in fact, you listen to the word and it means put an end to the state of trance, get out of hypnosis. You know, I talked the last couple of days about culture, and cultural hypnosis has us seeing information in a certain way that isn't necessarily accurate. So one of the goals of this work is to put our perceptual system on track with truth, which means that you've really got to want to see the truth in order for your mind to show you the truth. Otherwise, you get evidence of your BS, your belief systems. For instance, you know, one of the biggest hallucinations, or one of the greatest psychosis in this culture, and psychosis just meaning having a perceptual system that is not based in actuality or accurate data. And you listen to people instructing their minds to lie to them, to show them inaccurate data all the time. The most common one I know of is, and you know, you might ask yourself the question, have I ever said to someone, you know, you really made me mad. You hurt me. You upset me. You really disturbed me. That was so upsetting. And our culture brainwashes us, culture brainwashes us into seeing in a way that is totally and completely inaccurate. Now, you'll notice, let's just take one of those words that I just used, anger, when people say, you made me angry. You'll notice that if you've been through a particular form of anger 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. It obviously isn't about them, it's about you. You know, there are words that represent internal experiences. Sadness, fear, rage, hatred, vengeance are all internal experiences. But when we shift our language and try to pretend that those internal experiences are forced upon us from the outside, then we enter into this hallucination. We enter into this state of hypnosis. And most people in the culture have been hypnotized to believe that their internal experiences are caused by external events. You know, one of the things that I did when I was writing the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, is I went to one of the large bookstores, and I sat and I went through every book I could find on forgiveness, whether it was a religious perspective on forgiveness or whether it was a psychological perspective or a philosophical perspective. And in virtually every book, the instructions for the hypnosis were there. The minister would be talking to, you know, this couple, and he's telling her what's wrong with her and how she made him feel. And the minister reinforces the hypnosis by saying, the next feeling that comes up that there hasn't been a word put to yet, well, Charlie, when she did that, how did that make you feel? Now, that's an hypnotic statement. That's saying to Charlie, your internal state, whatever it was, I want you to identify. And implied in my language is that I also want you to believe that she was the cause of your feelings. Read every book you can from every psychologist on the shelf. And somewhere in the conversation, they're going to come out with, yes, and how did that make you feel? That's part of our culture. And it's a total lie. It's a total fraud. Words that represent feelings or emotions, I guess I should more correctly utilize my language, words that represent emotions are words that are describing energy, emotion, energy and motion within you, and those emotions are never caused from outside of you. If they're not there, any event in the world can happen. And those emotions can't move in you because they're not there. If there are emotions that move in you that you'd like to be free of, have we got a tool for you? It's called forgiveness. Oh, Michael, you mean when they make me angry, I'm supposed to let them off the hook? Well, I don't want to do that. Well, here's my advice to you in that circumstance. Never, ever forgive them or anybody for anything that's happening inside of you. Never do that. And the reason that I advise that is because you can't. It's not possible. Now, you can, if there's something painful moving in you and you have a word to describe that pain that's moving in you, done something, you know, bizarre, off the wall, illegal, immoral, bad, evil, wrong, nasty, wicked, whatever word you want to use, that resonated that information in you, it can be a very good thing to say, Charlie, I pardon you for what you did. I'm going to just let that go, let you off the hook, because what you did was really crazy. But I'm going to let loose of that. And now that I realize, Charlie, that your behavior, as bizarre as it was, did not cause that energy to move in me, but only revealed to me that energy is in me, now that I've pardoned you and let you off the hook, I'm going to step into forgiveness. And in stepping into forgiveness, I'm going to remove the energetic patterns from within myself that never belonged within me. And as I recognize that that's possible, all of a sudden, I enter into a totally and completely different perceptual world. Because all of a sudden, my mind can give me accurate data about forgiveness. So our definition that we've arrived at, and I'm still working on this, if anybody has any input, it's been an ongoing conversation for a couple of weeks now. True Aramaic forgiveness is a simple tool that removes any form of suffering, pain, fear, and or hostility from within and empowers me to wake up to the joy of my true nature, which is love. That's what forgiveness is. So it's a tool, when I understand how it works and I apply it, that literally removes my suffering, my pain, my fear, my hostility, and wakes me up, gives me the opportunity to experience the truth of my being, which is love. And with that comes joy. Aliveness. And I'm going to just tap into or step back and just ask Michelle if we've got anything happening, anything happening in the chat room with questions or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up.
We don't have either of those right now.
No?
We do have
okay.
Tim here, but I've got a suggestion if you're ready to move into a topic.
Well, actually, I was going to do a little more work with this forgiveness idea if there weren't any hands up at this point.
Okay, sounds good.
So we'll hold with that thought and see where we go from there. Cool. So I had shared some quotes a short time ago about forgiveness that really reflect the conversation in the culture about forgiveness. Some of them accurate, some of them not so accurate. One of them I mentioned was one from Thomas Monson, who says, blame keeps wounds open, only forgiveness heals. So right on with that one. But there's also so much confusion in the world about forgiveness that I want to step into an exercise of building brain cells so that you don't fall into the subtle language and the subtle errors of the cultures thinking about forgiveness and fall back into the patterned idea of forgiveness that we've been given from the Greek culture. So just would like to use this as an exercise for building brain cells. A pretty powerful quote from Mother Teresa. And, most everybody would listen to this quote and go, wow, that's so cool. If we really want to love, we must learn how to forgive. And say, well, Michael, that's certainly a good thing, isn't it? Doesn't that fit? I said, well, if you don't understand the meaning of the words, if you go along with the cultural brainwash, it sounds pretty good. But the problem with that forgiveness quote is that it implies that if you forgive, then you will be able to love someone. And the error there is that love is not a verb, it is a noun. And people say, well, isn't that kind of splitting hairs? Like, what does it really matter? Well, we talked about this a little bit in yesterday's, I think it was yesterday's show, maybe the day before, where we talked about the bowling ball. And if I think a bowling ball is something I can do, if it's a verb, then if I want to hand you a bowling ball, which is the thing, a noun, I want to hand you a bowling ball, how do I do it if I think it's a verb? I'm going to bowling ball you? If I think that love is a verb instead of a noun, then I'm going to tend to get lost in trying to do behaviors that will allow me to love you, which is an impossibility. And speaking of love, Jeannie just walked in the room with this little bundle that is so awesome. You know, maybe we can get her to say a word or two to us, make a sound or two. Hey, sweetie. Now, this is so on track for the topic of the moment. Here comes this being who is just the absolute presence of love, and I guarantee she does not and is never going to love anybody. Because you can't love somebody when you realize that love is what you are. And one of the things that we are supporting this little one with our language and this space we hold, and I'm getting grins from her right now, one of the things that we're supporting is her realizing who she is as the presence of love. And that love isn't something that we do, it's what we are. It's a state of being. And so the challenge with this quote from Mother Teresa, if we really want to love, we must learn how to forgive. No question, if we really want to experience ourselves as the active presence of love, then we must forgive. We must remove the things that block the awareness that we are love for us to be able to function as love. There's another quote that someone had sent me about love, and the quote says, forgive, and I'm going over this with, for the subtleties, so that when the culture starts its conversation of hypnosis, you can say, oops, no, that one's hypnosis, that one's not accurate. So the quote comes from a man named Steve Maraboli. And Steve says, and again, it sounds good within the cultural hypnosis, forgiveness is a reflection of loving yourself enough to move on. And people talk about forgiveness as moving on. Forgiveness isn't moving on. Forgiveness is about removing what never belonged within you. And if you think you can love yourself enough to do that, then once again, you think love is a verb. And you succumb to the cultural's brainwash and errant thinking. So forgiveness is a reflection of knowing who you are as love and or the willingness to take action to restore yourself to love if you become caught up in that. So Gandhi has a powerful quote on love. And maybe you hear some little noises over there. Aria's first words on the radio show. I remember her other granddaughter's first words on the radio show. I was driving around in the car taking care of her, and she gave us some little sounds. That's now about 7 years ago. If you remember that, if you were on the show, that was, she just turned seven in December. Awesome. Anyway, some words heard from love there. So Gandhi says this: truth, peace, righteousness, and nonviolence do not exist separately. They are all essentially dependent on love. And I would put in there the presence of human life. When love, human life, enters the thoughts, it becomes truth. Manifests itself in the form of action, love becomes truth. When love, this state of being, manifests itself in the form of action, he says, it becomes righteousness. So these are all the fruit of functioning as love. When your feelings become saturated with love, you become peace, we'll substitute the word serenity itself. The very meaning of the word serenity is love. When you fill your understanding with love, practice love, think love, feel love, all these values, it is every of having a human life. It is human life flowing in the undercurrent. It is love which flows. And another quote that was sent to me about forgiveness, and this is from someone that's pretty popular in the culture, pretty well known in the circles of healing and thinking in terms of the Course in Miracles and such, but here's the quote. Forgiveness is not always easy. At times it feels more painful than the wound we suffered to forgive the one that inflicted it. And yet there is no peace without forgiveness. Now, again, that sounds powerful. It informs us that going through this process of moving things out of the system is not always easy. But then the error, and this is someone who's very well known in the culture, I'm not going to mention names, so it's not playing a game there, but to forgive the one that inflicted our wounds. And we're going to offer that if we've been wounded in an interaction with someone, if we've bought into an energy that is less than love, that person cannot have, we can never deliver, we can never give them forgiveness. Whatever the wound was that they were coming from that caused them to behave in the way that they behaved, their behavior was not the cause of our wound. The energy we engaged in was the cause of our wound, and that energy must be removed. And it can only be removed by forgiveness if you want to be free of it. Now, it is true, there is no peace without forgiveness. Once there has been an energy that's less than love that we bought into, we tend to get stuck in that energetic pattern. If someone starts to talk to you about, well, then you better forgive them, stop. Restore yourself out of the brainwash, out of the hypnosis to the truth. Oh, if I'm not experiencing myself as love, then there's something in me that needs forgiveness. My sadness, my fear, my rage, my hatred, my vengeance, I may choose to pardon the person that was involved in my taking on that energy. But accurately speaking, I can't forgive them, and I never want to forgive them. And I'll have people who hear that, and then they'll respond to you, well, but Michael, I thought you were telling us to forgive. Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm suggesting that anytime you're in any form of hostility or fear, to be free of it, you must forgive. And that word forgive means you apply this tool that removes what never belonged in you in the first place so that you can be restored to the truth of who you are. So the reason I'm offering these thoughts is that when we engage in automatic conversation about forgiving someone else or forgiving ourselves, we're using language that perpetrates the Greek forgiveness myth. That forgiveness is about how you did it to me, it's your fault, and I'll let you off the hook and then things will improve. As opposed to, you did whatever you did, I bought into the energy, now I have this painful energy in me, I can choose to pardon you, let you off the hook for that, and now I'm going to remember that forgiveness is about me applying this tool for the removal of the energy of fear or hatred or vengeance or sadness or grief or rage or whatever it happens to be, removing it. And when I correct my mind, I don't get stuck in perpetuating that Greek myth that prohibits actual forgiveness from taking place. Well, Michael, what do you mean? How could that prohibit forgiveness from taking place just because I say I forgive them? Here's how it works. If I say to my mind, we need to forgive them, and now that we've forgiven them, I've done my forgiveness work. Am I ever going to do my actual forgiveness work? No. When I accurately describe the act of pardoning them for what it is, nice thing to do, wonderful thing to do, so I pardon you, and I realize that my interaction with you brought up significant pain in me, and now I'm going to apply forgiveness to that pain in me to be removed. And when I remove whatever it is that's blocking my experience of myself as the active presence of love, then I am restored to love. I'm restored to the awareness of the truth of who I am rather than the noise in my mind that blocks out my awareness. And so a few thoughts on forgiveness, and we'll continue that conversation another day. And let's check in and say hello to Dr. Tim. Dr. Tim, how are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Awesome.
We had we had another Thursday night support group where we had people zooming in from around the U.S. And
that's an interesting statement that the average person who didn't know anything about the electronic world would interpret as, well, I guess everybody got on an airplane and zoomed right in there into Chicago and spent time with Dr. Jim. Need some new brain cells for that.
we've made the Thursday night group available to people through the internet via the zoom.us conference site. So we had, I think we had four people zooming in from other locations and three people in the room, and we listened to a few of the, two of the Q&As from the Way of Mastery recordings and had discussion and had somebody actually work through a worksheet. So bless their hearts, everyone who attends and joins and shares their energy with this community. And
sweet.
It was a delight. Several people said they thoroughly enjoyed it. It's giving me opportunities for applying the tools of forgiveness because there's so much crackling noise in the phone system, and we have the issue of not having everybody have a full duplex phone system. So when one person talks, it blocks out the other and cuts people off, and we have them talking over each other. So it's a little work to be done on the technical side, but it's I've gotten several people that have thanked me profusely for making that available.
Sweet. So, why don't you remind people how to get to it for next Thursday, or how to listen to the archives of what you've published so far from it?
Well, if you go to my website at ch4cs.com, and if you click on the link that says support groups, it has all of the information about joining us for next week on Thursday. And if you want access to the recordings of the previous groups, you can click on the link that says Dr. Hayes's blog. And in the list of our blog entries over the past few weeks, I put out blog posts that give links to the shows. Alternatively, you can just go to the audio tab on my website, and most of those are listed there for listening or download.
Sweet.
And we had
somebody who's
never been to a support group or an online setting before, so that was interesting.
Nice.
And that person was the one who decided to do a worksheet, so that was also, you know, interesting. That I'm always thrilled when people step up with that level of willingness that they're going to dive right in and play full on. So that's just delightful. I look forward to the support groups on Tuesday and Thursday, each and every one of them, and just want to put out the invitation again to people to join us if you have any inclination, and or take advantage of the archives and give us your feedback, and or choose to go through the PayPal button on the website and add a little donation to help cover the cost of all of this production and making it available.
Sweet. Well, any insights from practice to share with us? Anything happening in working with people that brings up a point that would be important for people to understand?
Well, the big thing today has been kind of a shading off of the denial piece. And it really, you know, as so often happens, it goes beautifully with what you're talking about in the hypnosis of the culture and the conditioning that has me believe that the things outside of me are causing my upset. And when it's that well practiced and programmed in me, it can seem a completely insurmountable set of obstacles. Mostly because in the early phases, many of the people that come into my office haven't even been introduced to the concept that they have any ability to impact the creation of or the management of their negative emotions, aside from tolerance of the other people who are causing all this pain. They haven't really been introduced to the concept of their own choice of thoughts or automatic reaction pattern in thought is what's generating their upset. So it forms, you know, to my way of thinking, a very strong level of denial, but it's based in the thought of, well, this is what I know. And since this is what I know, it's not denial. It's just my knowledge. And I tend to believe my knowledge because I think it comes from a really reliable source, being me. And if I haven't
been introduced, and a reliable experience.
Yeah. Yeah, just because I've experienced it many, many times, I tend to think, well, that's the way it is and the way it has to be. And so one of the themes that came out in the work last night was, you know, similar to what you were talking about yesterday, don't drink the Kool-Aid. And one of the themes was, please build on your ability to tune into and follow your own intuition. And your intuition might give you hunches that, you know what, this is harder than it needs to be. This is, there might be something I haven't yet learned since I don't know everything. What I think I already know is either only partially true and perhaps even completely false. That will help me open to the possibility of building, as you call it, new brain cells or new experience or new levels of perception.
Tim,
so that's been the theme so far today.
One of the things that you resonate for me as you're saying that ties right back into our introduction, is when you realize how dramatic a state of hypnosis can be. I mean, literally, this person is standing on dry land on a stage in a building with lights and all of that, looks down and sees their feet planted on the deck of a ship. I mean, they actually literally see that. And, you know, the hypnotist hands them a broomstick. Now, normally when someone looks at what we call looks at a broomstick, light energy bounces off of this broomstick, hits the eye, resonates the brain cells, and the brain produces an image of a thing called a broom and a broomstick. But in a state of hypnosis, if this person is told that they've just been handed a fishing rod and they're going to cast it out into the water, I mean, this is so dramatic, the brain actually generates a picture. They look at their hand, what they call looking at their hand, and in their hand, it's not a broomstick, it's literally they see. Their experience is they have a fishing pole in their hands. Now, when you apply that to the false belief that you made me mad, I literally, when I'm under that cultural hypnosis, which as Tim points out, is also called conditioning, I'm in a certain situation where, let's say, for instance, I'm perhaps my internal alarm system is going on with fear, and my brain produces a picture that gives me the experience of you being the cause of my fear, because I've been hypnotized into believing that that's true. Until I break that down and start to forgive and realize that that fear is a product of an energy that's moving in me, and I can remove it and be free of it, and then you could do exactly the same thing as you did yesterday, and my brain wouldn't even approximate a belief that you caused me fear, because I've forgiven, I've removed the root of my fear, and therefore the experience of fear. But just what you, as you're speaking, Tim, what's really occurring to me is how to apply the dramatic knowledge that we have that this broomstick literally in my experience turns into a fishing rod when the hypnotist tells me it's a fishing rod. My experience of producing fear, anger, rage, sadness, hatred, vengeance, and then blaming the world for it turns into an experience where my brain hallucinates, builds a perception, literally a psychosis, based on what's moving within me that isn't even relative to what's happening. I mean, you know, this fishing rod, this deck of a ship isn't relative to the stage that I'm standing on with the hypnotist. And so our experience can be so dramatically in error. And to recognize that I can apply a tool to restore myself to the experience of love and remove this hostility and fear. And it's a relatively simple thing to do. Now, not always easy to understand, because we've got all of this brainwash that takes us off in another direction, believing that, you know, you really did do that to me. So just an aside there.
Well, it all fits, and it's part of what makes it so powerful and challenging to help people begin the exploration, to question it anew.
Yes. And Michelle, did I hear your voice starting to come in there, and I apologize for speaking over you?
I was listening to the conversation, Tim, when you were talking about intuition and encouraging clients and, you know, folks you interact with to rely on that, and I do as well. However, recently a dialogue came up with me and the client in terms of the discernment between intuition or, like Michael, you further described the denial in terms of the hypnosis about believing the thoughts that are generated from unchecked content. So
right.
you might have a sense of something intuitively, but then if you're not cleaned up, then how do you begin to know the difference? Is this my stinking thinking? You know, is this warning? Is this fear that is a warning? Is it stinking thinking or intuition, I guess, is the way to summarize it.
Right. And my answer to that with folks is always the rule of the three P's: practice, practice, practice. You will know as you start to work with your own thoughts and your own mind and correction, and you will know as you start to check out your intuition. We actually do a whole 9-day intensive entitled Intuitive Development, where all we do for 9 days is practical exercises, like real-time, real-life exercises, where people have an opportunity to tap into their intuition instead of listening to their hypnotized mind, to tap into their intuition, and then to get feedback from people around them as to whether or not their intuition is accurate or inaccurate. So it creates a compact space for somebody to get what otherwise might take years of developing intuition. To compact that into a 9-day period can really get the intuition really operating and have the experience of knowing when it's accurate. But you've just got to practice with it.
So under
and
the
same, other,
all of the above.
Yeah, but the
yeah,
other
all
thing
of the,
is,
all of you.
Michelle, the other thing is, one of my biggest advances came when I began to realize when my intuition hits, it's always a very calm, centered knowing. There's no fear. There's no panic. There's no anger ever involved in my true intuition.
And fear and anger and panic are things that, when they enter in from the mind in the hypnotic state, will tend to interrupt the flow of intuition, because intuition, if you go back to the ancient scriptures, the intuitive voice was called the still small voice. Intuition being inner tutor, inner teacher. And that's always a subtler energy and never contains, as Tim says, any of the noise of the emotional mind.
Right. So that makes sense. I use that litmus test when coaching people on, you know, making a choice and which one feels aligned with love. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Michael, yesterday was the day that you talked about bowling balls, at least the first time I ever heard it, because the hour before I had a huge breakthrough with a client who she's been doing the work for a couple months, and 25 years post-divorce, she's middle-aged now, she's never remarried and knows it's about the fear of trusting in her paradigm, the fear of trusting knowing the person, because she thought she knew who she married and it turns out she didn't. And so when I explained to her love being a noun, love being a verb, I mean, you could see the almost like a paralysis momentarily in her face when the light bulb like switched on, and it's like you could just see 20 years shedding, like, and she actually said, that lets me off the hook for everything. And I mean, it was like I wanted to start laughing, being respectful, because I was like filled with glee, like, oh my gosh, she got it. It was so exciting.
Yeah.
And she
Sweet.
Was like her mouth hanging open. And so then I go to the radio show, and there you go, explaining for 20 minutes, and you bring in the bowling ball thing. And I texted her, I sent her the link, and I said, here, I go, you know, why don't you?
We set the tone for the show today.
I muted myself here, but let me see. I said to her, why don't you, share that with your son? And she said, yeah, I had been, how did she put it? I'll tell you.
Well, you're looking for that. And now that she's been pardoned, that she's let herself off the hook, now she can step into and activate forgiveness and remove the root of the pain and move forward in life free of that and in relationship. And, you know, it's interesting. It's what most people experience as a person is really just a set of energies stored within them about relationship that couldn't get put into their brain's image of this other person. And they think that this picture in their mind is actually this other person. And it never is.
We got to that point because over the holidays there were, you know, object of her attention was her son and his new girlfriend. And so a lot of times what I'll do is weave a verbal worksheet into the dialogue, and they don't even know that I'm just leading them down the path. And then because I know her history, and then pointing out the parallels, you know, she was like warming up and then sort of taking it home with the love thing. She said, I am still in awe over the whole love as a noun. I wish I would have figured this out years ago. She goes, I know, I figured it out now, so that's good enough. She goes, thank you and see you soon. And she was just so grateful for the, you know, the explanation, because she couldn't necessarily at this stage probably repeat what I said, but hearing you reiterate it, and she was like, absolutely, thank you, wonderful. I texted my son earlier, and I told him that I couldn't wait to share what I had learned today. She's like, this is so perfect. So she's got a history of being raised Catholic, and so there's, you know, some foundation for some of the language related to Yeshua that is,
right,
you know, easier to build on, let's say. But it's just
cool.
So thrilling. It's like, you know, is your grandbaby eating any salads yet?
No. She's actually, there's a video that I posted on my Facebook page about 4 days ago. She had her first taste of solid food, and we got a video of her tasting sweet potato and having for the first time something other than mother's milk in her mouth. And she takes it in. She doesn't spit it out. She doesn't swallow. She just kind of, you know, she's just, it's so cool to watch her. She's going, wow, what is this? This texture, this taste, I haven't had this before. And she kind of gives a little grin and a little frown, and it's just cool. So no, she's not eating anything, but
she's had her
first little spoon of sweet potato. Say again?
That pretty much describes my experience. Like when I'm working with clients, it's almost like, you know, they're having this taste of something for the first time. And do they laugh? Do they cry? Do they, are they happy? Are they, you know, depressed?
Exactly.
Because they realize what I've lost with not knowing this. And you can't go back. You can't go back to sleep. And that's the beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. And I might suggest that what she shared with her son, and I'd offer this to her as a, if she happens to listen to the show, as a an exercise for her to do as an assignment, that she should go back and share this with her former. If that can be done without creating trauma, that would open another whole space of forgiveness for her. And the ability to integrate into all of those parts of her physiology, i.e. her mind, the actual presence of love, where perhaps there's trauma stored. So just a thought.
Oh, no, yeah, that's not a bad idea. I mean, that's a good idea. Let me say it like that. Because
be like a mind shifter.
At the beginning of the session, she, when I was kind of outlining, when she realized it was all her and that everything she talked, that the story was nothing to do with the problem and that it was all her. And she actually said, this is going to be impossible. I don't think this many years, this deep of pain, you know, kind of that loathsome self-hate, you know, when you're seeing it and it looks like it's too much. And, you know, I pointed out that it isn't about knowing how or, but rather the willingness, you know. So that was, at the end, by the time we were talking about love as a noun, she says, now I have hope. It was really rather remarkable.
That's sweet.
It was really good.
Very cool. And, of course, the vision of this work is to open the space where literally 6.5 billion people wake up one morning in the realization that I am the substance of love. I am created out of love. That is my nature. It's not something I do to somebody else or anybody else could ever do to me. I can behave from that, and I would call that loving behavior, but strictly speaking, it comes from my experience of myself as who I really am. And the restoration from the self that has been based in fear and hostility and sadness and grief and rage and pain, all blamed usually on someone else or maybe blamed on self, is exactly what Yeshua was talking about 2,000 years ago when he said, in order for you to live, you've got to die. This self that isn't, like, remember when I was a kid, I had a record, a 78 record of a story called The Bear That Wasn't. And I can remember I used to listen to that and listen to that and listen to that and listen to that. And now realizing years later, the title would be The Self That Wasn't. Never was, never could be, and the restoration of who we are to the truth of who we are, that the self that wasn't literally in actuality dies. It is forgiven. It is removed, and it is replaced by the integration in every cell of our structure of this active presence, this active state of love that we are, replacing, transmuting every bit of pain that ever was within our physiology, within our genes, within our generations. So that's the the ultimate vision of this work is to make that available, to get a critical mass. And we listen to this physicist, Yeshua, who says, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And we know he wasn't talking about bread. He's talking about this restoration that needs to take place. So that's cool. You got another person through the gate. And
another
she's going to touch her son. And who knows, maybe her former with it too.
No, that's a great idea. And this last part, that's when I really know that people get it, because that was one of the things she remarked later. She's like, what if everybody did this? You know, kind of like your mind starts expanding about possibility when you get it for yourself and you want to get it for other people. And so it was just clicking. I mean, she just sort of floated out of the office. It was one of the better.
Nice.
She's like, everything's been good up to this point. Because this takes the okay.
Sweet.
Again, in 2 months, she's done more than previous 8 years, and that really just feels cool to be part of.
Yeah. Awesome.
Good.
It gives a whole new on the idea, you know, when this culture has a phrase that it uses in a oftentimes a rather hollow way, and the phrase is thank you, Yeshua, thank you, Jesus, and it becomes hollow when compared to thank you for giving us this tool, Yeshua, that allows us to experience this restoration. Like, I've never seen anywhere else that even comes close anywhere in the culture to that. And so this one being 2,000 years ago came forward with this and says, here you go, folks, here's how you do it. So thank you. And that's a fast hour. We're down to the last minute or so. That was amazing. I just looked at the clock on my phone. So we're going to just say thank you, everyone, for being here, for your willingness to open, to be the space, to receive this information, to put it to work, to pass it on, to share with others. And if you choose to you know, our website is whyagain.org. You can go there and gather all the free information that you want on how to do forgiveness. Go into your app store in your phone and type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's first forgiveness app that will show you exactly how to do the process. And if you choose to support that, we've still got about 9 days left of someone who has put up to $3,000 forward to match any donations that come in to support the work. So if this is touching you, we invite you to go to our website, and there's a donate button. Click on the donate button and pass on a note that says, here's how the work's impacted me. In the meantime, you know, attach this, the MP3 of this show. You can go to the website afterward and download it or get a link to it. Attach it and share it with someone else. And create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes, and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.